Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen in. Previously on The Rundown with Katie Zafaris.
Observing kind of other people's successes and hardships also shapes my experiences and how I want to be. And what I've realized is that the harder I work to be a good athlete, the better it also makes me as an athlete, but the better it makes me as just like a person in general. And everything I've learned as an athlete is completely like helpful off of like the field of play. And so I think that's also like been what I've learned through triathlon and the person I've become through triathlon.
On this episode of The Rundown, I had an eye-opening conversation with ultra runner Jerry Hughes. He overcame adversity far before getting into running, pushing forward through his diagnosis and treatment of Gardner syndrome. He used running as a way to improve his health and quickly realized endurance was for him. From marathons to 100 milers and now the Canadian 48-hour record, he's inspiring the run community and proving that we're all capable of so much more than we think. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. It's no secret that proper fueling leads to better performance. Now with tasty energy bars, protein bars, and electrolyte tablets, Exact Nutrition has got you covered before, during, and after your run. They even have a plant-based option. They currently ship to Canada and the US, so order yourself a sample pack and give them a try. You'll even receive 15% off your order when you use the promo code LARUNDOWN. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today. In this week's news, a Canadian woman set a Guinness World Record running the fastest marathon pushing a double stroller. Tiffany Thamy did so at the ADNOC Abu Dhabi Marathon, crossing the line in 3 hours, 20 minutes, and 58 seconds, pushing a stroller with her two young kids inside. She was gifted a running stroller after she had her first kid and was able to keep her passion alive. Everywhere she went, she took her son with her. A lesson that just because you have children doesn't mean you need to let go of your dreams. She dedicated this run to all the struggling parents out there and will hopefully inspire a few of them to keep moving. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this story, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. I can actually say with this interview that I'm actually blown away by this next guest, even before we get a chance to speak. He's got an incredible resume of ultra running accomplishments, but also some pretty tough life challenges as well that not everybody gets to face. You might recognize him from his latest 48-hour record attempt and something that he successfully accomplished. I'd like to get into it with him. There's a lot to unpack. So I'd like to welcome to the show, Jerry Hughes.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be a part of this podcast.
Yeah. And like I said, no exaggeration there. Like I was going through your accolades and everything you've been through. And it's like, it's just a wow at one after another. So I'm super pumped to have you. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling much better now. You know, the recovery has been a little slower than expected, but also kind of to be what expected from running 48 hours almost straight.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, I'm sure people have already read about it and saw like what you accomplished there, but maybe what kind of inspired that and then how it all went.
Well, I've always been inspired to see how I could do, how many kilometers I could do, and how far I could go. And what was really interesting is in July I was just in a funk, and I actually didn't run from mid-July to August the 30th, and then I started getting back on the horse and running. And within a couple of weeks, I seen Fat Ox. And I was like, there's zero. There's the coach to 5K. I'm going to do the coach to 48 hour. I do have a background. I have been running for you know, 10 years at quite a lot of kilometers. And I just had a really amazing training block, 6 weeks of hitting between 160 and 180K. And I really believe that the venue in Arizona at Flat Axe, that I could challenge for that Canadian record. And I'm super motivated. And when I put my mind to something, there's not much that will stop me. I think in life, we put a box on what we can do, and there's nothing that we can't do. It's just believing in ourselves and going after what we believe in.
Yeah, and what's also impressive is that, you know, it takes a lot of time to prepare for these kind of things, but it's not just running for you. You have a job, you have kids, you know, family, and all this stuff too.
Yeah, you know, I always say you'll find out how badly you want something based on what you're willing to sacrifice to get there. And obviously, you know, my wife has been amazing, especially the last couple of weeks, basically being a single parent. But in the lead up to the race, I had some big days. I mean, I only averaged about 3 hours a day, but every day, you know, my alarm went off many times at between 2:45 and 3:15 in the morning. Get that run out, go to work, maybe get a short run after work, and then, you know, deal with my, get to hang out with my four kids, all under the age of 11. So if you want something, you'll find the time to do it. You'll find the time.
Yeah. What's the hardest part about preparing for some, like an adventure like that?
The hardest part to prepare for this would just be the self-belief in yourself that you can do it, really. The training is obviously tough. But if you break it down into a training block, so you're only going to train for, say, 12 weeks, and then, you know, you're going to have a rest, that really helps. It's that day in, day out, getting those kilometers, getting those hours, and just not having any excuses. My whole way that I live is no excuses. So not every day you want to get up and run. Those days are the days that really will push you. And on the days that you go for that 48-hour record and you break those 48-hour record, it's the building blocks of those days that you didn't want to run that you ran during that race when you didn't want to run.
Right. And you said you went down to Arizona for that, right? So like, what did it look like logistically, and how did the day go? Like, was there ever a doubt that you could get it done?
Well, one thing really cool that happened is I met an amazing crew named Stacy that, you know, just I put an ad out in Phoenix, Aberaipa, basically Facebook, and I had her as a crew. And she's basically my crew for life now. She was amazing. But what we didn't plan for, because it's Phoenix and it's supposed to not rain, is that day two, it rained for 21 hours. So it rained pretty much from 11 a.m. to 8 a.m. off and on. And I remember just doing loops and my crew being, okay, it's going to rain for a couple more hours. Because it was originally just supposed to be a couple hours, and then boom. You know, it just sank over Arizona, and they actually broke a weather record from 1908 for the most rain on that day. I had all my other rain at running gear. I have lots of running gear. I'm from the West Coast. I'm used to rain. Didn't have a rain jacket. Luckily, my crew had a rain jacket, gray with pink trim, which is perfect because it's my colors. And, you know, you just roll with the punches. You don't get down. You just keep going. So I knew that going into day two that it was going to rain a little bit. So I was really kind of stacking day one and just rolled with it.
Do you find that like that maybe that was a nice distraction from maybe what you were going through physically?
The rain got cold. I mean, it got down to like probably 6 degrees, and it's just like the course is new, it's concrete, and it didn't have drainage, so it had standing water. So you're just running through puddles, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that I work is I can turn off my brain. So if I have a goal in mind, I'll do it. And I literally didn't, each lap was just under a mile, and I didn't ask what lap I was at to lap 50. So I'll just keep going. My crew will give me what I need, and I will just keep rolling with the punches. ultra running is like life. There's always going to be changes. There's always going to be something that doesn't go your way. Lots of stuff happened to me even up to the lead up. We can talk about that later, which is pretty crazy. Lots of things don't go your way, and you can do one of two things. You can dwell on it, or you can find solutions. There's always a solution. Mm-hmm. And the way you come out the other end is what you're defined by.
Yeah, and it's challenging sometimes. Like, it's good that you have that, or maybe over your life develop that skill. But you know, for so many, when they're faced with adversity, they freeze up and don't know how to tackle it and feel overwhelmed. You know, by problems, they have a hard time maybe simplifying this adversity and have a hard time getting through it. You know, is there a way to simplify it, or advice that you give to people?
Yeah, there's a way to simplify it, is to know that a race will never, just like in life, a race will never go perfectly the way that you plan it. It just won't. Your nutrition will change. Your belly will say no to stuff. Everything will say no to stuff. So the solution is to try and kind of go through those, you know, lower moments, do your best, kind of ride it out, and know that there's going to be a lows, there's going to be problems that arise, but it's how you kind of fix those. So the ways to do it is to never think about, say, okay, I got to run 48 hours, or I got to run 100 miles. It's like, I got to run a couple laps. I got to run to the next aid station. Just little things to play with your brain to get yourself just through that little part that maybe is a little rougher than you want it to be.
And you mentioned the belly like going wrong. I think this is one of my biggest downfalls or pitfalls, is like, what do you eat and how do you not upset your stomach? What's your kind of go-to?
Okay, so the beauty for me is that I have had my disease, Gardner syndrome, for my whole life. So I actually am an intermittent faster. So I only eat between like 5 o'clock at night until whenever I want. But I don't really eat during the day. And I always run fasted. So I don't usually use a lot of bars unless there's a couple of exact nutrition bars. So the way I know my body is, I've never had GI issues during a whole race, which is interesting with my disease, but I've had lots of practice, is I stick to exact nutrition bars. And then there's a time, usually after, you know, anywhere between 18 and 24 hours, where my body says no, and this is going to sound funny, it says no to nothing but Coke or Pepsi. Because it has sugar and salt you need. So I'll literally live off of Coke, Pepsi for hours and hours and hours. It makes you laugh, but it's like jet fuel, and it has the sugar, it has the salt. And the last 24 hours, I pretty much lived on just that and oatmeal.
Wow.
But I've become a fat and adapted, I believe, because of the way that I train. And my stomach's not... I think too many people kind of go by a parameter that they want to cram their belly with carbs or with calories, when your body can only take in so many calories an hour anyways. And if your body's saying no to something, you should probably just chill out and not take it for a little while. Otherwise, things can arise.
Right. Yeah, that's good advice. And like you said, everyone's different, so they're going to adapt to different fueling. And like you mentioned Gardner's syndrome, which is a big part of your life. And maybe we can go back to like the start, like when you were a kid, and like, were you active as a kid? And like, you know, let's kind of unpack all the challenges you faced even at a young age.
I was super active as a kid, lots of sports and stuff. And, you know, my dad had this disease. He didn't know it, but he was in the military. And the military is all about, like, you know, you deal with it. You have a stomach problem, you take Pepto-Bismol, and you get on with your life. And it wasn't until 1993 that, you know, one time he just couldn't, like, do anything anymore. He was in so much stomach pain. And they go to do, like, you know, a colonoscopy. Everybody knows what that is. And they do the thing, you know, they do the procedure. And they say, okay, you have Gardner syndrome. But they couldn't actually get anything to go in. So when they opened him up, they're like, oh, instead of having Gardner syndrome, you actually have liver cancer now. And you have a year to live. So this was 2012, and just from the things that he had, and we're going to get a little TMI here, but I had been having problems with my stool pooping blood for ages, low iron and stuff. So I knew I had the disease instantly. So when I was 13 years old, I went in for my first major surgery when it was kind of unknown what Gardner syndrome was. And I got a colonoscopy bag for junior high. That was kind of the start of a few surgeries to go down the road. A year later, I ended up getting something called a J-pouch. It's called an ileostomy bag, but it's called a J-pouch. It's just a little man-made pouch. And I go in it now every year because it is always a chance of coming to cancer. So they just check the belly from the one end and the other, and they see if there's polyps. The J-pouch is just a little man-made, so I can't eat any raw vegetables, any raw fruits, any citrus. The way the vegetables go in, sorry guys, is the way that they come out. So broccoli crown hole is not a fun day. But we've learned how to kind of deal with all those things. You know, my dad passing away when he was a week before he was 34 saved my life. And it's made me never dwell on my disease. So I did have a rough patch probably between, you know, the usual ages of 18 and 24. It always made me want to be better. And from 24 on, I just been wanting to be a better person from how many countries I've traveled to everything that I've done in my life. I take it as a blessing, not a curse to have this disease. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, is it a challenge going through as a kid, like going through school and stuff?
It was for the 1 year because you did have the colostomy bag, which is outdoor, right? So it does make sounds and stuff. So kids can be kind of harsh. So for the 1 year, it was a challenge. And I did miss a lot of school because you had to miss 3 months each time. When I was 13, I had the first major surgery. When I was 15, I had the second major surgery. So it was a challenge. And, you know, you have that fork in the road where you can feel bad for yourself or you can figure out, again, you know, what can I do? They gave me a list of stuff I couldn't eat, a list of stuff I couldn't do, and all those type of things. And I just kind of threw it out. And, you know, I just played trial and error from the age of 13, 1993. I'll be 43 January 5th. Mm. And it's been a journey.
My mom and sister are on January 2nd, so you're quite close.
I have a kid on the 18th and the 26th, so it's a busy month.
On January?
No, December. I have one.
Oh, okay, good, good.
I have a 1 year old coming on the 18th, or birthday on the 18th, and my daughter will be 4 on the 26th. That's a busy month.
I'll have to check and see when this episode's coming out because, 28th. So, close enough for a birthday gift. Yeah, that's quite something, like, to go through school. Like, did you have any like mentors going through that? Like, it sounds like you've come out of it so strong, but like, was there anybody, role models helping you through?
Gardner syndrome, unfortunately, is not glamorous. Even to this date, there's not much known about it. It's just if you Google it, they're like, your life expectancy is 35 to 45. And that's it. It's not nearly that bad once you're diagnosed. So I had nobody when I was that young. It was not known. You know, people were a little bit harsher back in the mid-90s. We all know this. And so there wasn't the avenue to kind of like, you know, get that help, get what you need. So now my goal in life and what I do is to be that person to help people with stomach issues, gastro problems, anything to do with Gardner syndrome, colitis, Crohn's, you name it. I want to be that person to be like, you know what? I know it's, especially if you get in an older age, it's tough to do, but I've been there and I can help you out. And I want to be a driving force into helping others get through anything that they can, mostly, you know, emotionally. It can be tough when you have to wear a colostomy bag, you know, as a female, obviously. But now colostomy bags have come a long way where they're a lot more streamlined. And my sister has a colostomy bag for life, and it's just a lot better. So, no, I never had a mentor, but I would love to do that going forward.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure you're helping people just like with your story and how you've overcome it or how you continue to survive with it. And it's kind of like I had never heard of Gardner's syndrome, and, you know, it helps people like me or to understand it a little bit better. And it's brutal. If the life expectancy is 35 to 45, I mean, that's midlife for a lot of people or just before that.
Yeah.
So, and I guess it's hereditary too?
It is. And one thing with me too is I have my whole running career is I've undervalued my disorder and I haven't pushed what I actually go through. So I need to do more podcasts like this so people know more about Gardner syndrome, that even though I look like this elite runner, maybe I am, I do have Gardner syndrome. And, you know, for people like my sister, you know, she's on disability because of it. It's quite difficult. And my kids do have a 50-50 chance. So in 2011, my son was born. I was 221 pounds. I'm now 144. That was my driving force, was to clean up my act, see what I could do to show him what was possible, not in running, but in life, that no matter what happens, if they get my disorder, there's nothing that they can't do.
So would you say, like, through, like, from when you were a teen to into your 20s, did you remain active? Like, what was the cause for, like, were you always a heavier kid, or how did you?
Yeah, you know, I'm a chef, and I just got into that lazy mentality of, like, you know, drinking, eating, just, like, you know, not really being super motivated. I'm super all or nothing for sure as a person. And I actually met my, well, now wife, when she was 17 and I was 23. And, you know, when I met her, it kind of changed my life. I really wanted to travel the world. So I cleaned up everything. I started working 80-hour weeks, and we started traveling the world.
And was that something she was already doing, or was that something like that?
No, she was just in high school, just trying to get through, you know. One of my biggest things, accomplishments, was getting her to graduate, just because we were both kind of in a spot, and we both made a negative into a positive, and it's been amazing ever since. 20 years now.
Incredible. Yeah, that's nuts. And so, like, and then, so you mentioned, like, the weight and in your body, but, like, you mentioned drinking too and stuff, and wanting to turn that around, like, so that your kids were the driving force behind that. And, like, I'm wondering, like, is that then when running took over? Like, you weren't running before this or active before this?
So I did something called boot camp. We all know what boot camp is. Just like the outdoor boot camp. And then at my local gym at Studio 4, there was something called Fight for the Cause. Basically, I boxed a little bit when I was a teenager. They took 28 people that have never fought before, and you actually got your BC boxing license, and you trained for 8 weeks, and you went to the BC Conference Center, and you fought in front of 1,000 people. It was for charity. But obviously, somebody's trying to win. Somebody's trying to punch you in the face. So I caught a local celebrity called Brian Botano. He's a VJ. And one of us ended up with a broken nose, and it wasn't me. And I ended up winning. You know, he actually hit really, really hard. But I had the stamina. So as soon as I realized that he threw haymakers, I just kind of timed him, ducked, and threw a bunch of jabs. So did that, won that thing, won that fight. Did a little hockey, but I'm a little bit reckless. And then in 2014, I decided to do a 10K without training. And I did it in 45 minutes. A month later, I did a half marathon. I did an hour and 40. No training, no watch. And I was like, okay, maybe I have something for this. But I do remember when I finished the half marathon, I was like, I'm never running this distance again.
Right.
And then so I kind of springboarded into the marathon training. And I did 4 marathons, qualified for Boston. And haven't done it, and did Boston just for fun. It was awesome. And haven't done a marathon since. But the way in life is you go big or you go home. So if you want to raise money for Help Build Your Dream, is a local charity on the island, which helps island kids, helps them with their medical stuff, helps them go to dream vacations. I'm a dream kid from 1995. And so I wanted to start giving back to Help Build Your Dream. And I realized that the only way to do this was to go bigger. So I had no idea that these races existed, 100 miles and so on. So that's how it kind of went.
Wow. And did this 10K that you signed up? Because, like, how I started running was kind of similar with I did 10K, and then I'm like, what's next? And it's like half marathon. And then I would drive to this half marathon in Ottawa, actually. by myself the morning of the race, didn't know anybody, just did it, you know. But yeah. Was there someone encouraging you to run? Like, running's not really a popular thing if you're not into it, and like, you know, a lot of people have like reservations about running. Is it bad for your knees? And I can't run, you know, like.
So, oh man, if I had a quarter for every time I said bad for your knees, I'd be rich. Knees, quads, thighs, everything else. It really wasn't. I did run a little bit between like 16 and 20, probably 10K a day.
Yeah.
But just, you know, I wanted something that I thought I could do, and I was slowly, I was heavier. So when I did fight for the cause, I went from 190 to 160 in 8 weeks for this fight. And, you know, is this a TC 10K is very popular in Victoria. It brings up to 1,000 people. And I made a deal with myself. If I broke 45 minutes at the 10K, then the next month I would just sign up for the Oak Bay half marathon. And that's how that was just my goal from there.
Okay. And then, like, and I guess you didn't train for the half either then.
No.
No. And for anybody listening and who's new to running, that's a very bad idea. Like,
absolutely. 100% don't say anybody should do that. I was kind of in good shape at the moment, and I realized that I did have kind of a niche for running. And definitely, you know, speeds don't matter. 6 minute mile, 12 minute mile are the same. So, the times don't matter either. It's just, yeah, just trying. But definitely for a half marathon specifically, training is the key.
Right, yeah. And so, like, now, you know, with this charity that you're, you know, they're raising money for, has that been, like, constant for you? Like, is this, like, do you make it part of every event that you're doing?
No, I do probably one a year. It just takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, all that stuff. So I haven't done one since 2020 when I ran for 35 hours straight for Help for the Dream. During COVID in 2020, COVID was huge, and they just weren't making any money. So I set up a race called One Track Mind in November, Victoria. Terrible idea because all it did was rain, and ran for 6 days. But I also did like a 12-hour event, a 24-hour event with a person that did the race director, Lisa Lars. And between all the people in the community that, you know, a lot of my friends that didn't want to do this, you know, the distances of 12 hours, 24 hours, they all kind of got donations themselves. And we were able to raise close to $50,000.
That's incredible. Yeah, it's like super, I mean, that's an amount that can make a huge impact, you know, so.
Yeah, it's literally, you know, a few dream vacations for kids that really need it. And now that COVID's opened up, they can go on those dream vacations.
And they send these kids to places that they would like to go to, or how does that work?
Yeah, they do. And they also, what Help for the Dream does that others don't is they help with like medical equipment. They'll help you get to Vancouver because that's a huge issue. But, you know, if you do well and you're going to beat your disorder, they might, you know, your dream might be to go to art school and we'll fund that. Like, it's not just commemorative that you have to be having 2 weeks to live. So anything that's kind of been in the kid's dream list, you know, it does happen where a kid is not doing well and we might make their room really nice and, you know, beautiful so they can spend their last time, you know, their last remaining months, not in a hospital, but in their room.
And well, yeah, we'll throw a link in the show notes. So if anybody wants to donate, they can contribute to that cause and help support. I think that's really great. Like, I'm looking at your resume here of, you know, ultras. You talked about the Boston Marathon, which is a goal of a lot of people. But then once you get into the, you know, Squamish 50 miles and then all these 100-mile races and stuff, was it like, I mean, now you're into these, you know, races or record-breaking events based on time in a few days? Like, where was it just like one thing led to another thing? Like, it seems like you keep going for bigger and bigger and bigger distances. Like, was that always what you had in mind, or has it kind of evolved over time?
I have evolved. So I did the 50-miler, and then I decided to do Rio del Lago 100-miler. My goal was just to finish 24 hours. And I actually finished in under 19, which was good for seventh overall. And then things just kept on springboarding. But with good comes bad. People started pulling me in different directions.
Right.
It's all of a sudden everybody wants you to race because you had success. So, you know, in the last year, I've had to be like, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to do long distance timed events because they're fun, you know, they're awesome. But I also want to do, like, I'm going to do the Cowboy 200 miler in Nebraska in September. I'll probably do a 100 miler Badger, and then I'll go to the World Championships in December. So now it's a mixture of what I find is super fun. Well, they're all super fun, but what I find is super fun in between lofty goals. So I don't do any races that I don't want to do anymore. If they're really technical, climby, stuff like that, that's probably not going to be me. But if they're fast, fun, and I love them, like the Nebraska races, 200 miles, 100 bridges, flat as a pancake, that is super exciting to me. Just to see all those bridges in the Midwest is amazing. So I've learned now to go with my heart, which is I definitely want to forever see how far I can go. My overall goal is to be the greatest long distance, like multi-day runner the Canadians ever had. So I will do the 24-hour championships September 2024 in Budapest.
Oh, very cool. That's awesome. Any plan to run across Canada? I know, well, we've had one young guy. I don't know if you know him, Skyler Roth McDonald did it during the pandemic for like mental health. And but I know that's it's been attempted a few times.
Well, my friend Dave Proctor just broke the record.
Dave Proctor too, yeah.
And I just broke his record. He's a friend of mine.
Okay.
So I'm always chasing him. So during that race, it was like I was chasing the shadow that is Dave Proctor, right, to get his record. Crossing Canada is not in the wheelhouse currently. I, you know, big family, things like that.
Well, yeah.
Am I going to say never? No, but the amount of time and effort and family that it takes, I would say that that's like a, because runners get better with age. Ultra runners actually get better going into their 50s. So I would say that would be like, you know, a 10-year type of goal. The immediate 5-year goal is to improve on my 48 hour, see what I can do in the 24, 72, 6 day, and then sprinkle in, you know, fun races that I want to do, as well as going to the World Championships next December in Taiwan.
That's insane. Yeah, and you know, like in you were saying, you got to travel earlier in your life. That this also like extends that and gives you the opportunity to do it. Like, would you take your family with you, or are you kind of going?
No, I definitely do it myself. Yeah. It's kind of an extravagant way to get a week off when you have a family of six. my wife has been absolutely amazing. You know, she's the one that's in here in the trenches for the week that I'm gone. But yeah, no, I don't take any family. I'm pretty inverted. The lead up to this race, I was super quiet, even about the whole Canadian record. And I just kind of go myself, and it's a zen type of moment. I run happy. If I run happy, it's going to be a good day. But I like to kind of be with myself.
Right. And you mentioned like Dave Proctor, and like, you know, he's part of the ultra run scene, Canadian ultra run scene. Like, how have you kind of linked up with the run community, and like, have they been like, have you had a chance to connect with them through your running, through your story, through your travels as well?
Of course. You know, ever since I switched over, like I quit drinking in 2013, so it's been 9 years. Ever since that, you know, I actually reached out to Dave when I found out that you could do these silly distances of 24 hours. The first time I did my 24-hour race. And Dave Proctor is just such an amazing human being, not only as a runner, but as a person. And he just really has, you know, given me tips and things like that. And the ultra running community is second to nobody. I think we know this. The amount of support I had after this race, all the shares, everything like that, I still haven't had time to really kind of unpack and get into that just with what's going on. But the amount of help, I mean, even during the race that I did at Badass, it was pouring out. You know, a couple gave us their tent with some zero gravity chairs and some propane. My crew came and did this for free. Stacy, the running community, the ultra community in particular, is just so amazing.
Yeah, and they, you know, they show up, you know. I find I did like a even just a cross country race, and it's not quite the same, but like, I like that, the vibe that you get, you know, sometimes they're, I guess they can be compared in the sense that like, maybe they're smaller events, you know, you go to a world major and it's like 50,000 people. It's kind of, it's huge, you know, it's doesn't have that homegrown feel that an ultra would or a cross country event would. So
ultras are all about community. What I love about ultras is its community. You know, you get almost more excitement out of volunteering, out of crewing, you know, seeing people go through those ups and downs. And it's just like really important. These big groups of 50,000 people, 20,000 people, so on. You don't get that same grassroots feeling that you would get as if you were doing an ultra. It just, just wait 1 second here. Sorry, my daughter's up and she's like, always up, my show. So here we are.
She wants to say hello, right?
So. No, she wants to say my show. So she's just going downstairs. So
what's her show?
You know, the usual, probably Gabby Dollhouse, Blippi. Oh, what else? There's a laundry list of shows. I don't actually watch TV. Yeah. I've watched TV in years. I'm a bit of a documentary junkie.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, as soon as I stopped watching TV, there was just a correlation in how the rest of my life went.
Well, I'm sure just in time, right? Like you just have so much more time when you're not. Any documentaries that you like that we should check out?
Kind of like endless brainless stuff. Nothing too exciting. Nothing on the ultra scene. I don't do a lot of ultra documentaries. I got to do more of those for sure. I like to write my own story. I know that might sound corny, but that's kind of how I'm kind of proceeding through life.
Any like documentaries done about yourself, or like you think you'll write a book one day?
No documentaries about me. Who knows? You know, and eventually, I see more things coming. I see coaching coming from this. I'd love to do motivational speaking, and things of that nature. I think there's a lot to be held with what is possible within your mind that you don't give yourself credit for. Mm-hmm. So motivational speaking will be there. Coaching 100%, just different little brain tricks on how you can do things, not in just ultras, but in life. But it all starts with ultra marathons. There's nothing more beautiful than doing a 100-miler because it will strip you down to nothing in that race. And there's a point where you'll have to figure out how to get through the rough patch. There's nobody there to help you. You might have crew, but you're by yourself.
Is the goal to maybe do this like full time one day? I know you're working as well.
I would definitely like to do this as more revenue streams in this way and cook less. I mean, I'm not a fool in knowing that, you know, nobody's getting rich from ultra running, but I believe that there's niche markets to, you know, do things to make money, to help you get better, you know, to help you get to the places you want, just from sponsorships, just from paying for entry fees, you know, paying for travel is huge. Those little things kind of like really build up, right? So in time, yes, for sure. We're definitely working in a direction here. I really wanted the clean record. I seem to be a self-sabotager when I'm on the cusp of something great. Over the last few years, I tend to make it not happen. In this race, there was nothing that was going to stop me from accomplishing my goal, even the rain, which was tragic, especially between midnight and 6 a.m.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you find like, is the running there to spread the word or spread awareness, raise money for charity, or is it more of like a personal pursuit now?
It's personal pursuit. Is it more than anything? This race, I did something that Dave did as well when he crossed Canada this time around. I decided to do this race not for charity, not for nobody but me. Sometimes we just put so much pressure on ourselves to raise money, run for different kids, which is amazing to do. But there is times where you have to be a little bit selfish and you have to run for yourself and run for your dreams and your happiness. So that's definitely where I'm at now, is I'm trying to just you know, write my book, basically like my life book of ultra running and how it's just continuously getting better. You know, you have your rough patches had a couple of years and you just keep getting better. So it's a journey. And I think sometimes as runners, we need to be just a little bit selfish in a good way. And we have to go after what we love.
And like, and quite a like long list of accomplishments, as I've already mentioned, but like, what would you say is your greatest accomplishment?
You know, there's definitely, I mean, obviously the 48 hour is the greatest accomplishment for sure, but there were so many things that I never thought that I could ever accomplish. You know, I'm the Canadian 2018, I might be wrong, but I think that's it. You know, I became the Canadian 100K champion runner, for that year. You know, I won the Lost Soul 100 miler by like 5 hours in 2019. These are things that I never thought were even possible. And then now with all the multi-day runners, you know, I went to Phoenix in 2017, first 24 hour, never done it before, and I ran 234.5K, and I was new to this. So had it been now, it would have been much better because I actually walked the last 3 hours, and that still holds as the top top kilometers for the 35 to 39 year old male. So I mean, there's some layers to my accomplishments, but just being able to not just win the races, but you know, doing well when I know I can do. Like, I don't race anybody anymore; I race myself. And just I've accomplished everything past my dreams.
Mm. Yeah, you talk to a lot of people, like, you know, you got to run your own race, you know, especially in ultras, like so many things can go wrong and so many things can happen for 100 miles. So that's like super important. Anything like you mentioned, like had you raced that event now, it might have been different. Like, are there any things that you can look back on when you first started ultra versus now, like things that you'd never do? Or like mistakes that you made early on, things you learned?
Yeah, from. I mean, one thing you do is if you don't respect the course, it'll eat you alive. So there's been times in my career where I haven't respected the course. Maybe you look at the elevation profile, it's not high. If you don't, it's 100 miles. Doesn't matter. It's 100 miles. So if you don't respect the course, it will get you every time. And then learning to run in pain and not feeling great. Like now I don't really feel anything past 50K. So 2017, if I could put myself in the 2017 desert solstice, I know I could run the last 3 hours because I know how to run shuffle in that pain spot. And it hurts, but it doesn't hurt any more than it would if you were walking. But yeah, respecting the course is what I've definitely learned.
And like, what about in your preparation, in your training, like what would you say is like the best formula for success in that regard or for those distances?
I think the best, and this will sound funny, the best training formula is for people to stop doing the 6 and 8 hour runs. Because for anybody that's busy and with a family, that's why I want to help coaching with family, those 6 to 8 hour runs, you know, on your days off, they're not productive and they're hard to continuously do. It's basically an ultra marathon. So the people like Zach Bitter, Camille Herons, people like that, they actually never run 6, 8, 10 hours. They generally run 2 to 3 hours in the morning and maybe a half an hour in the afternoon, let's say. And what happens is that you can build up your kilometers by doing, you know, running almost every day, getting that half an hour run in the afternoon without breaking down your body. Because every time you run 6 to 8 hours, you're basically running an ultra marathon. And I think we get worried. We want to give ourselves confidence by running, you know, 6, 8 hours. But the truth of it is that it all feels the same after 4 or 5 hours, no matter your training.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I have a friend training for his first 100K, and he's just doing like, you know, Saturday, Sunday, 3 hours back to back, you know, instead of like a 6, 7 hour.
Yeah, I train almost every, like when I was really, for my peak weeks in the mid 180s, where I was doing, like, I don't really usually train by kilometers, I train by hours. Mm-hmm. But I was training 2, 2.5 hours almost every day, which was much easier than, say, a 6 hour, 4 hours. And that's just way. And the way that I did this whole training block is that I called it training by heart rate, not ego. So I ran 80% of my runs this training block based on heart rate. So I got faster, my heart rate was lower, and I would barely ever look at my actual distance. Except for, you know, the way I train too is that I don't actually have like a plan like speed day, because I think we always get anxious with like, well, Friday is our speed day. Whereas I just kind of let the legs tell me what they're going to do. If they feel really good, then we go. Things like that.
Right, yeah. And like generally your pace, I guess, is a, like a slow pace then. Like it's a, like a zone one kind of.
Well, yeah, but it's usually zone two where I would sit okay. at. Yeah. So anywhere, so I would keep my heart rate anywhere between 132 and 144.
Okay.
For majority of my runs, which for me would be like a 5:15 pace, somewhere in that range.
Okay. And more where would you say like you saw the greatest improvement in your running?
Just over this last training block, just from kind of taking out all the stresses of having to see how fast you can run and just kind of running for that love of running and running for your heart rate, slowing down your runs, enjoying it more. The slower you run, the more you can run the next day. And that was the greatest thing that I think really came out from this training block. I had zero injuries, no real problems at all. And I think when we strip ourselves of our ego, running becomes a lot more fun.
Yeah, and I think like that's where I enjoy it the most, you know? Even on days where, like, I don't want to, I just kind of get out there and I'll go for 30 minutes after work, or, like, I've been running at lunch recently, and it just breaks up the day a little bit, gives you some fresh air, you know, kind of like...
Yeah, finding that little pocket, right? You don't need to run forever. You find that little pocket in your day where you can just get that little run in. That's all you need. You don't need... And then you just kind of, like, the building blocks, you know, you build off that run, and it's getting out there on the days that you don't want to run that are probably the most important days.
Right. And what do you like, are you taking any days off, Jerry, or are you, it's a 7-on-7 for you?
Well, usually I run close to every day, okay. But I haven't run a step since after the race.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I haven't walked a step, but generally for me, it's mostly every day. I was doing a running streak. I think I got somewhere to 100 days running, maybe. It was just kind of like felt good. But some days I would just do the 2K thing. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm generally a 6 to 7 day runner. But one of those runs will be like generally my days off are Monday, Tuesday. My busier days are the weekends. So the weekends, you know, I might run just an hour that whole weekend. Just to kind of recharge. So 7 days a week, but not hard and not long every time.
Are the kids confused that you're home right now?
No, they're wondering why I can't walk and why I'm like, you know, asking them to do every little minuscule thing. This recovery was much harder than I ever would have expected.
Right.
Which again, I say, if you don't respect the course, they'll get you. I don't think I respected the recovery as much as I could have. And here we are.
Yeah. So how can you, do you know how it was different? Like,
I made a strategic error after you, basically after you do 100 mile or any race, you should kind of hydrate, walk around. This event was kind of over at 8 a.m. It was pouring out. And nobody wanted to be there. I only took 3 10-minute naps the whole race. And I was just exhausted. And I just went to sleep too fast, too early, and laid on one side. And it just went like rock. So lesson learned, I know better. So when I do this again, it'll definitely be staying up, hydrating, eating. Usually if I do 100 miler and I hydrate, eat, walk around, things like that, I can recover within a couple of days.
Okay. And like, how long are you out for? Like, how long do you take off before you start like really training again? Like,
well, it generally goes by race. So if I'm doing like 100 miles. It's usually 10 days break. That's usually kind of the rule. If I finish my run, and I know that I'm done for 10 days. This race, I knew for sure that I wouldn't run for a month. That was kind of like the goal.
Okay, yeah. Because and I'd say like sometimes you think you're good, but then you're not really. You know, like I've done, I mean, the longest I've done is like a, you know, Ironman, or I think I've ran up to 70K or something like that. But it's like you think you're okay, and then you start running again, and then you're like, you kind of have this like mini like let down a bit, where mentally, physically, like you're achy a bit, you know, still.
It's physical. Like, you know, I'm still super fatigued, and that's why I go by heart rate. Like if I ran today, my heart rate would be over 140 within like, you know, a fast walk. So I won't really, so that's the biggest thing is that we try and run early, but then our fatigue level is so high that we just, our body doesn't repair. And it's not the muscles. It's the, it's just the muscles. It's your neurological system. It's everything. It's just out of whack. I did a video posted on Instagram. My left quad is still like twitching. And I did a video of it just like bouncing, looking like I'm working out.
Yeah.
Everything is just still just nutty. It doesn't know what's going on because you stopped racing, you stopped running. So taking it slow, and this is again for earlier, Jerry would not have done. I would have just went right back into running. Is, you know, taking that time, not only physically, but mentally, hanging out with your family. You know, the whole way that I train now is different than before, which helps out for life balance. And that's the key, is that I do 8 to 12 week training blocks. I'd say 12 weeks between with a build and a taper. Then I take 2 or 3 weeks off, and then I repeat. So instead of having that whole year, because, you know, Kipchoge and all those people that do, you know, 2 or 3 marathons every 18 months, they do the same thing. So having that block where you're like, okay, I'm going to run for 12 weeks. My peak's going to be 6 weeks, but I know I'm going to get 2 or 3 weeks off for the family and things like that. That just helps in your whole life balance and just makes everything enjoyable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. Well, it's important. I mean, with four young kids and wife and, you know, like you got to have some time for you. What do you like to do when you're not running?
When I'm not running, you know, traveling is always a thing. Hanging out with my kids. Yeah. You know, the highlight of my day is getting off work and hanging out with my kids. Might do a movie night, might do cards. Hanging out with my kids is huge. We'll go to sporting events. We have a PFC football team, soccer team here. That. Grizzlies, things like that. So just anything I can do, hanging out with my kids.
And you mentioned like, you've traveled a lot. Where is your favorite place to run? Maybe both like abroad and also like close to home.
So I haven't traveled a lot running. This is previous life, just traveling as a backpacker, you know, back in the day.
Right.
But my favorite place to run is Phoenix. I just have such good memories of Phoenix. I did Desert Solstice there, did well, just did Fat Ox there, did well. I love Washington State as well. So the only country that I actually ran in, I Cayman Islands Marathon 2017. It did not go well. we made it more as a vacation, and I was raising money for Help Build a Dream. So I actually did 40,000 steps a week before, and it made for a really rough race. But as far as travel goes for running, it's mostly Washington, Arizona, California, and that's because they have like so many more races. Obviously, you know, I cannot forget to mention that I did do Tennessee's Big Backyard back in 2018 as well. That was obviously amazing.
And like, does your wife run too, or does she understand this side?
She's starting to understand. You know, she's super supportive. She doesn't understand all aspects, but she is supportive in what I'm doing, and just seeing that, you know, what my driving force is as far as helping out those that need help, showing my kids what's possible, and, you know, just becoming a better overall person. Because, you know, the person she was 220 pounds, and I'm not that person anymore, obviously. But she's very supportive, and she's so helpful in times like this. She's literally been a single parent for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, like superhero, you know, like,
you know, 100%, like behind the scenes in the trenches, like stuff that you don't see when an ultra runner does what he does. You just see me running around in circles. You don't see the fact that, you know, she's managing the day to day operations of, you know, a household of six. Wouldn't have it any other way, but there's a lot going on. And when she's in charge of that, you know, it's super helpful, and it's imperative, and it's, words can't describe how much I appreciate what everything she's done and doesn't, and still supports me in all the crazy things that I do.
Right. Yeah. And like, I'm sure running's taught you so much. Like, has it also helped you just like with your daily life, like everyday life? Like, what's some good advice you can give?
It's helped me in daily life, just with the way that you deal with all your problems in life, is to learn that, okay, so you didn't have a bad day, you had a bad 5 minutes. You know, you just need to get through what that little section was. You know, when your day is at work, it's super busy. No, when you get home, you're going to see your children, or you're going to see your dog, or whoever you're going to see. And so there's little stresses in life that maybe mount up that you just got to, like, just break down into being like, you know, we're pretty lucky to be who we are, and not everything's perfect. And it's a lot like ultra running. Not everything's perfect, but it's how you kind of adapt to those little situations.
Do you ever think about, like, well, I mean, with the disorder that you have, like, do you ever think about like that in terms of like, you know, you're living with this now, you know, but a lot of people don't live beyond the point that you're living, you know? You ever think about that, like, in terms of...
Not at all. So with my disorder, if you get diagnosed early and you get the surgery, so basically I get... basically, they do a scope down one end and out the other every year, because I do have a small intestine that's full of polyps. They check it out to see when it's, if it does turn to cancer. So I don't, because we're checking it every year, or 18 months, whenever they tell me. We're taking out those little things that aren't looking good. And there's no real proven life expectancy to somebody that has, you know, got surgery young and is healthy. You know, I don't drink, don't smoke, don't do drugs, don't do none of that stuff. And so we don't know what's possible. So I don't actually ever think about my disorder. Like, almost zero. Even when I go over surgeries, it's just something that's part of life, but I never think about it. No, I plan on being around for a while.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. You have, like, the peace of mind. Like, I guess those numbers are, like, if not detected, then this is what could happen. And if
Well, I've had the same surgeon and same two surgeons since I was 13, and they're almost going to retire. And that's probably the hardest part, because you build that relationship with the people that have been kind of dealing with their stomach since you were just a kid, 13-year-old, and now I'm 43. So getting that new person will be a bit of a thing, right?
Right.
Because exactly. You built this relationship with these amazing doctors, and they know everything about you. I've watched countless nurses retire. Even my surgeon is semi-retired, but he does my procedures still. So, yeah, you know, there's a saying. That's why I don't, you know, Google Dr. Google anymore, because I had 18 stress fractures 1 year. I had zero, by the way. We don't Google things, because if you like Google Gardner syndrome, it's just nothing but the world's going to end. Everything's terrible. But I'm proof that it's not nearly as bad as what, you know, Google says.
Right, exactly. And is it, do you have to change the way you're like your diet, nutrition and stuff like that is, or?
100%. So I can't. So your large intestine basically breaks down all your food. So I can't eat anything large, anything whole. So sorry for your audience, but if I eat a broccoli crown whole raw, it's coming out the same way.
Yeah.
Not a fun day. So I can't eat any vegetables, any fruits, any citrus that are raw. Can't eat any nuts, seeds. I don't want to say can't. Limit. Everything needs to be cooked down. Now, with that, I'll make decisions in life where I want a really nice meal, and I'll know I'll pay the consequences later, and that's just how it is. But you definitely have to make dietary choices for sure. So I eat, you know, fairly normal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Family, we eat pasta and pierogies and, you know, of course, craft dinner, Katie, chicken and rice. Yeah, you know, the whole gauntlet, really. But and nothing is a little bit boring as far as, like, you know, I don't eat a salad for sure.
Right. And is there, like, any, do you have to take supplements as well? Or do you find that helps? Just, like, you know, if you can't.
I don't have to, but I just take supplements.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so there's no supplement that I do take, but I do take, you know, a gamut of vitamins. I don't take multivitamins, but I find it hard to believe that my body can digest 18 nutrients in one vitamin. So I take separate vitamins, probably 8 to 10. Biggest ones being vitamin C, calcium, potassium, for sure. And then I take vitamin A, K, iron. Oh, there's a few.
Right. Like, is it... Yeah, I'm vegan, so, like, I got to make sure I get all my vegetables and stuff like that. So, legumes and whatnot. So, yeah, I can imagine, like, you got to have some of those vitamins that are necessary kind of to function.
Yeah, vegan's always really fascinating me, and I'm sure you do take some kind of multivitamins as well, or vitamins in that respect. I'm not sure what you take.
Yeah, making sure I eat well, you know, that's like the main thing, getting it in my food. But yeah, you have to take some.
The whole misconception was like, so I only eat chicken because a lot of things don't really work with me. But the whole thing that, you know, vegans have to take vitamin B shots because, or vitamin B because they're vegan. It's just not true, because beef is actually shot with vitamin B injections. Yeah. We know that. So the misconception. So I don't eat really any beef. I eat and lots of chicken, lots of ground turkey, things like that.
Good stuff. So what's next for you in terms of racing or events? Do you have anything in mind, like any big goals coming up?
Well, we're gonna see how this leg, you know, the legs respond. I'd love to go back down to Washington and do Badger Mountain. I've done it twice. I have a second place and a third, and I want to try and see if I can get the course records. But the biggest races on my list this year are the Cowboy 200 in Nebraska. It's a point-to-point 200-mile race through just a really scenic part of Nebraska, really flat, hundreds of bridges. It just seems so exciting to me to go through all these little towns that nobody sees. I just love it. I can't wait to do it. There's prize money. There's $1,500 for the win and $500 for the course record. I will be attempting the course record. And then I'm going to go to, again, you know, I always wait to see how my body responds 2 weeks later. But then I plan on going to the World Championships in Taiwan on December the 2nd.
Nice.
So those Cowboy and the World Championships are for sure. And if Badger doesn't work, I need a little bit more time. I'll find something fun in, say, May or June. But Badger's one of those grassroots one. The race director is amazing. He's been to Ball State. He's done all those. Such a good dude. It's only $140 for the race. I love the race.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
Still want to try and get out there for the Squamish 50. I got a buddy out there who's from Victoria, and he's been bugging me to get out there to do it.
Yeah, so I did the Squamish 50, and then a year later I did the Squamish 50-50, which is really, and I just missed the podium. I had a bit of a slow day one.
Right.
Within like 9 hours and like 50 minutes. And I put the hammer down day two. I did 6 hours and 35 minutes for the 50K.
Wow.
And I missed out on the podium by like 3 minutes.
But it must be beautiful, right? Like,
it is absolutely stunning. It's such a hard course, but it is a beautiful course. And Gary Robbins, you know, people come all over the world for this race. He's really built like this grassroots amazing race where everybody wants to be there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And he's quite now quite popular anyways with his, you know, with his own career, his own ultra running. So that's kind of cool that he put that together.
Yeah, well, he's kind of done with ultra running. As far as an ultra runner, he's officially retired. I'm retired, but as far as his, like, just doing more and more amazing trail runs, it's just skyrocketing. He has a 100-miler in Whistler and things like that. So he's definitely like the mecca for all of Canada for race directors, I think.
My last question for you is, what does running mean to you?
Running means freedom. It gives me the freedom to run. It gives me purpose. It's just, it's a beautiful thing when it's just like 2 feet and a heartbeat, it's just you and running. So it's really had a profound effect on my life as far as like what it has done to me just as a person, a father, everything else. I look forward to running, and it's such a beautiful sport. I know a lot of people will disagree with that, but there's a beauty of just like having to solve your own problems when you're running, getting to figure out, you know, I have some of the most amazing ideas when I'm running. It's just, it's a little bit of rambling, sorry, but there's just so many amazing things that have come from running for me in my life. You know, it's made me such a better human being, such a better person, more relaxed, calm. And yeah, I can imagine where I'd be without it.
Yeah, and I mean, you've done so much, and I'm sure you're like helping a lot of people with your story too. And you know, I like it when running can act as a vehicle for that and support others, you know. So yeah, keep on going, and it's amazing what you've done so far, and no doubt you'll accomplish more down the road for sure. And where can people find out more about you?
Well, you can go to Facebook and go for Jerry Hughes. You can go on Instagram, go for Running for a Cause. Those are the biggest places to find me. I do as much Instagram stories as I can. I will be launching my website probably in the next 2 months.
Okay.
We'll do some coaching. We'll do some different things like that, helping people with, you know, the mental aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to keep moving forward, finding things to do, finding ways to inspire, mentor, and just show people what kind of, you know, what they're capable of.
Yeah, we're capable of so much.
How much more than we believe.
Of course. And thanks so much for getting up with me this morning and for this early interview. And yeah, it was a real pleasure talking to you. And it's, like I said, it's been amazing to kind of see what you've done, where you've come from, and how you continue to push the envelope and move forward. And we're really excited to see what you're up to next.
Thank you so much for having me on this platform. It is amazing to do a podcast in general. I'm just so excited to share my story with everybody, with all your listeners. And I'm really excited, and I'm thankful for this interview. Thank you very much.
Yeah, pleasure, Jerry. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
I've been running for a while now, 12 years in fact. It's funny to look back on how I got started and how different things are for me now. I made a lot of mistakes, simply because I didn't know any better. I ran hard every time I went out. I ran longer and fewer days to increase volume. I wasn't recovering as well as I should have, and I didn't prepare long enough for distances I was taking on. What I wish I did from the start was get a coach to help guide me through and teach me the right way. Sound familiar? Well, I learned a lot from those early mistakes, and now I want to help you. Over the last year, I've gradually entered into the world of coaching, helping athletes of all levels reach their goals. It's virtual, interactive, one-on-one training that will help you focus on running so that you can hit your next target. Just shoot me a message at jpugs84 on Instagram with any questions you may have, and we'll take things from there. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to leave your reviews for us on Apple Podcasts or message us directly on Instagram with your comments, feedback, and suggestions for future guests. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a WRG production, produced by Leslie Woods and Forrest McKay. All the amazing graphics you see on social media are created by Ryan Bondi, and the show is hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.